And now the final episode of Michael McKenzie's series about having obstructive sleep apnea and what being able to change the quality of your sleep does for you.
The very first morning, the furniture got rearranged in the house, the house got spring cleaned. I couldn't stop myself. I was bouncing off the walls.
That was after the first night?
Yep, first night.
This is Wendy. I'm Michael McKenzie. Welcome to part 4 in Adventures in CPAP. So even though you've never had something like this on you before, and if it's the same apparatus I've had, it's got the nasal pillow and you've got the pipe coming out of the top of the head and this machine next to you, even though that's all this completely foreign material in bed with you, you woke up next day transformed.
Absolutely, yep. Just instantaneous. It was incredible.
I'm so jealous.
You didn't have that happen?
Wendy was diagnosed with severe obstructive sleep apnea after years of spending her waking life feeling exhausted. She'd have to prop herself up with sugar every afternoon. Her husband was exhausted too because he was either kept awake by her snoring or he was frightened awake when Wendy had one of her many apnea events and stopped breathing. But that's all behind them now, because Wendy loves her CPAP machine. CPAP stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. And after using it to keep her airways open for just one night, Wendy awoke feeling like $1 million. So she's kept with it, unlike me.
I have had some interesting occurrences, like waking up with the mask off and not realising that it was off. And one night I woke up to find the cord wrapped twice around my neck, which was rather ironic when you think about it. Something that's supposed to save your life could have possibly choked you instead.
More from Wendy later, along with two other people who've contacted me having changed their sleep quality for the better, although one is using a slightly unorthodox method.
Can I ask what brought you along in the first place, Michael? Why did you seek out getting a study done or getting seen?
Following an overnight sleep study conducted through my local pharmacy, the results came back. I had mild sleep apnea. My pharmacist, Dustin, recommended that I trial a CPAP machine, which I have been doing for a few weeks, but we're just not getting on. It keeps pumping air into my lungs at a rate of knots at about 4:30 in the morning, and that's waking me up. However, Associate Professor Mark Howard, who's a renowned sleep specialist, reckons there might be other options I could consider.
Michael, how much alcohol do you have each day?
I'm glad you're asking those questions. I actually don't drink a lot of alcohol. People may scoff at that, but it's actually true. On average, over a week, I might have maybe 3 glasses of wine.
So I can't claim that to be the problem. I'm going to point out another little bit of information here on your study results. So we've got... you don't mind me talking through these bits?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So we've got height, weight, and then body mass index. So body mass index of 30.2, which just tips you over into what people would call as obese, just because their cutoff's considered 30. So there would be room to try and improve your apnea by tackling weight as well in the long term.
And here's the rub. One of the reasons why, I'm not saying it's the only one, but one of the reasons I'm overweight is I'm tired. So if I break that cycle by getting more sleep and better quality sleep, then does it follow that people tend to lose weight?
Well, you asked me that question about whether we've shown it improves heart attacks. I can say the same thing about weight. We haven't shown that it actually reduces weight, even though that relationship's there. So people will feel more active and they'll be more inclined to exercise, but we can't definitely say that treating the apnea is going to make you lose weight.
Okay, I need to lose weight anyway.
Yep.
And if there's a byproduct of that is that I get better sleep, then well to the good.
Correct. And we know that you need to lose at least 10%. So for you, you're talking about losing 9-10 kilos to have a significant impact on the apnea.
So what should I go back and tell Dustin? Because he, as my pharmacist, is genuinely intrigued and concerned for me.
Yep.
And you know, wants to know that he's doing the right thing by me. So what should I tell him?
In the end, I'm going to say, in the end, the decision will be yours. If you feel like you've tried the CPAP, you've given it a solid go, used it for, you know, at least a good few weeks minimum, then I think in the end you're probably better off putting it to the side. Now, we might find some people who do that, go away and tackle other problems, but come back to it. I think this comes into the psychology of it, Michael. CPAP for many people is confronting, you know, as the first time they walk in, and it might be a reason why they've delayed coming in and doing anything about it, because what they know about is CPAP and putting a mask on their face, and, you know, they're reluctant to consider doing that.
I can't wear the CPAP mask because I am claustrophobic.
Let me introduce you. This is Suna.
And I've rung Michael because I did a didgeridoo class with Charlie McMahon, and everybody else in the class was going there to learn a didgeridoo, but I was actually going there to learn how to breathe better because I was diagnosed with sleep apnea, and I was reading an article saying that the didgeridoo is a good way to clear your airways. So I told my sleep specialist that I was going to learn the didgeridoo, and he had a bit of a laugh and said, well, I have heard that it helped. Good luck with that. So I went along and did the class with Charlie, and I find that when I do play the didgeridoo, that it helps me snore less, and when I wake up in the morning, I wake up much more refreshed. I hadn't played the didgeridoo for a couple of weeks, and my daughter came out of her bedroom and said, Mum, play that bloody didgeridoo. Your snoring was so loud last night I couldn't sleep.
What is it you do with the didgeridoo that could be changing the way your throat is operating?
You're actually breathing in while you're breathing out. So it's a continual airflow. There's no stopping. So I think that just clears it up and keeps it very open.
What does your partner think?
Well, he snores, but he won't play the didgeridoo, so it doesn't matter.
Turns out there is some clinical evidence that didgeridoo playing can be effective in minimising or reversing the symptoms of sleep apnea and snoring. The British Medical Journal published a piece back in February of 2006 where, in a randomised controlled trial, 25 patients aged 18 years or over with an apnea hypopnea index between 15 and 30 compared to mine, which is around about 8. So they've got about a moderate level of obstructive sleep apnea and also complained about snoring, took part in didgeridoo lessons for 4 months. And the conclusion? Regular didgeridoo playing is an effective treatment alternative well accepted by patients with moderate obstructive sleep apnea syndrome. And if your teenage daughter begs you to play it, you know you're onto a good thing. Now, just to prove it's not just the middle-aged or the overweight who can fall foul of obstructive sleep apnea, you present the Country Hour for Victoria for the ABC.
I do.
I'd like you to meet a colleague of mine. His name's Nikolai Bailharts.
And you got in contact to say, I've been on CPAP for how long?
I reckon probably a year and a half, maybe. A year and a half, 2 years, somewhere around there.
How did that happen?
Well, I was working in breakfast radio. It will come as no surprise that I got a little bit tired from time to time, but I think I was probably about 26-ish, and I noticed that it was getting worse.
What was getting worse?
The tiredness. So it wasn't just I could have a bit of a nap or do with a little bit of extra sleep. It was, if I could go back to sleep when I woke up, I'd sleep for another 3 hours or another 4 hours. I was just exhausted. And so I figured something was up. In that role, a lot of the time was spent on the road, driving around. So I actually regularly built in naps in the car. So it ended up making the days quite a bit longer because what should take maybe 4 hours to do ends up taking 5 or 6.
So you went for a sleep test, I take it?
I actually did 2. So it's quite a process in getting this diagnosis. So I, as a result of that last test, I was waking up 29 times an hour that I was not aware of.
Did you have a transformative night from the get-go?
No, it took a while. I think it probably took almost 2 weeks. And there was a bit of, is this making any difference? Why am I bothering with this? Because it's a bit cumbersome. It's not the most.
And expensive.
Yeah, very expensive. $2,000 for a machine. You know, it's not a, and then you've all the parts you've got to replace and so on. All the.
Have you worn out parts on your CPAP?
The mask, yeah.
You've worn out the mask.
Yeah.
What were you doing with it?
Just wearing it around the house, bringing it to work. The one that I had this kind of foam on it, on the strapping to try and make it softer.
Right.
And the foam just kind of deteriorated away. And after a while, I was using the nasal pillow to start with.
Yes.
Where it kind of pops into your.
I know. We've been talking about the nasal pillow in the series. Mm.
And they were starting to get a bit discoloured and a bit gross, so.
Yeah. Now I'm feeling gross. So in a year and a half, clearly you've stuck with it because you're sleeping.
Yeah, and it has made a difference.
And how does your partner feel about it?
She was always pretty good about it when I kind of said, something's up, I don't know what it is, could be bad. But since then, she's loving it because I don't snore, so she can actually get a good night's sleep. So she's incredibly accommodating because you do look a little bit like something's very wrong with you when you're wearing it every night.
You make me really horny, baby.
The scary thing is that untreated, it's worse than drink driving when you're driving a vehicle. So that's really scary. Mm. And if I've had this for undiagnosed for a very long time, I've been a real danger on the road, and that worries me.
That's Wendy. You met her at the front of this episode. Wendy was diagnosed with severe sleep apnea and had been on a CPAP machine for a few months when we meet, and she loves it. She purchased hers through Dustin, the same pharmacist who's been dealing with me and my much milder apnea. Sleep specialist Mark Howard says as long as pharmacists continue to build their skills in sleep disorder diagnosis, and he's one of the people helping that happen, then he has no problem with their involvement. The same goes for nurses and GPs, because quite frankly, sleep clinics like Mark's can't keep up with demand. However, Mark Howard also cautions, if your exhaustion doesn't go away, then you need to rule out other causes with a specialist. And then there's this issue. Do you think there's an area for concern that clearly pharmacists are conducting sleep studies and then perhaps recommending CPAP machines, that part of the reasons for their decision-making, it may not even be overt in their mind, is that they know that they will derive some profit margin out of every machine they sell?
Yeah, this is a problem where devices are used for medical treatment. These conflicts, if you like, and I agree, it may be subconscious or as compared to being conscious, can arise. The challenge in the device field is that we don't have that degree of regulation there. So there is the potential for a conflict, and you know, the simplest thing may be to say, oh, there's some apnea, let's go straight on to CPAP for treatment, without necessarily carefully teasing out, one, whether that's the best treatment for the particular person, and two, whether apnea is genuinely the cause of the problem.
So what would you counsel to me, knowing that I'm struggling with the CPAP machine as being part of my life? You can see how long it's taken me to reach 18 nights to present to you.
Yeah. I would probably start from scratch for you and say, all right, should we try getting your sleep to be a bit longer? Get rid of your computer screen at night time, try and get to bed a bit earlier, avoid the meal at 10 or 11 at night, you know, have some catch-up naps and longer sleeps on the weekend, and see if that makes a difference to how you feel, potentially.
Mark, I do want to change, and your insights have been incredibly valuable. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
You've been listening to Adventures in CPAP, produced and presented by me, Michael McKenzie, and big thank yous to Mark, Dustin, Wendy, Nikolai, Suna, and you for all your stories, comments, and advice. And what's happened since I recorded the series? Well, I gave the CPAP machine back to Dustin, and I've been exercising more and trying to lose some weight. If you're on that journey too, all the best, and you can find more information on the Life Matters website.
Michael McKenzie with the final of his series about having obstructive sleep apnea, Adventures in CPAP. If you've missed any episodes, you can catch up on them via the Life Matters website.